WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A shocking school shooting in Newport News where police say a six-year-old boy shot a teacher during an argument in a classroom yesterday. Police Chief Steve Drew says the student wasn't going around shooting people. It was just contained to that one classroom.
It's a hard situation for families. It's a hard situation for our most valuable residents here as our young people, right? That's our future. We got to shake hands and give some high fives, but I saw a lot of tears today. I saw a lot of tears today, and I'm not just talking about in students' eyes.
Police are trying to figure out how the six-year-old got the gun. He's in police custody. The teacher's in the hospital with life-threatening injuries. After days of voting, the House of Representatives finally has a speaker.
As Friday night turned into Saturday morning, the votes finally came in for California Republican Kevin McCarthy.
And now the hard work begins. What we do here today, next week, next month, next year, will set the tone for everything that follows.
McCarthy persevered through 15 rounds of voting that started Tuesday afternoon, and it ended with high drama. McCarthy fell a single vote short late Friday night. Another late night vote followed, with enough conservative holdouts opting to vote present instead of casting votes for someone else, as they'd done throughout the week. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
GoFundMe set up for the family of five kids shot, one fatally, at a Dumfries home this week has raised almost $20,000. Four of the teens remain in the hospital this morning, including one whose boyfriend is charged with a shooting that also killed a three-year-old girl. Family friend Alex Grimm set up the GoFundMe.
We have two guardians of these kids that are having to travel back and forth from Fairfax, you know, Prince William County up to Fairfax multiple times out of the day and at any time that they're called and they need to come. Obviously, they're not able to go to work right now.
The three teenage girls, their three-year-old sister and four other siblings have been taken care of by their grandmother and aunt since their mother died from diabetes in September. No winner in last night's Mega Millions jackpot, so up for grabs in Tuesday's drawing, $1.1 billion. An assistant manager at a convenience store in suburban Detroit says they've been busy selling tickets.
When the big games get this high, that's when people that never play the lottery gotta come in.
Tuesday's jackpot is the third largest in U.S. history. WMAL Sports, the Caps fell to the Predators 3-2. The Wizards defeated by the Thunder 127-110. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 66 westbound, there is road construction. Right lane is closed right at the Fair Oaks exit, exit 57. Outer loop of the Beltway, Cabin John, road construction. Roadways down to one lane between Clara Barton Parkway and the GW Parkway. 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. And in Prince George's County on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is an accident. Right lane is blocked right after Central Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunshine to start your day and a few clouds this afternoon. Temperatures only climb up to about 47 to 48. Clear skies again tonight. Temperatures to fall down close to freezing by tomorrow morning. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 37 degrees in Leesburg, 38 in Gaithersburg, and 42 degrees here in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update.
It is hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by John Gizzi. And, you know, it's great to have John on this morning because finally, in the wee hours of the morning, at 1:39 a.m., after 15 votes, Kevin McCarthy was sworn in as the Speaker of the House. It's been a very contentious week in Washington. It will be a very contentious 2 years ahead. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Glad to be here.
What a week. Tell us about the week, for starters.
Well, everyone knew by Monday that Kevin McCarthy, Republican leader, would not reach a majority of all those present on the floor of the House of Representatives. Normally, it would be the magic 218, a majority of 435, but Democratic Congressman Don McKeachum of Virginia suddenly died in November, and this means it was the full House minus one. McCarthy fell short by an unexpectedly large 19 votes. That's right, 19 fellow Republicans, nearly all of them affiliated with the Freedom Caucus, which is the voice of genuine, good-as-gold water, right-of-center conservatism in the House Republican Conference, abandoned him for other candidates. This was the same story throughout the week. 19 Republicans, sometimes 20 when another member voted present, simply would not vote for the person who had led Republicans to a majority in the House, had been their leader for several years, and who salivated over the prospect of wielding the Speaker's gavel. Why? They felt that their supporters at home wanted more from the Speaker and a Republican majority, as slim as it was. Well, that's what Kevin McCarthy did. He negotiated with them. He made major concessions to the point that many of us felt these Republicans were voting against him because they simply did not like Kevin McCarthy. But it finally all came together, and with 202 fellow Republicans voting for him, and then nearly all of the 19 never Kevins coming his way, the minority leader will now emerge as Speaker of the House. It was a long, grueling process. I might add, the longest vote for Speaker in over a century and the first time since 1923 when it went past a single ballot and up to 9 votes. So, in any event, we see a Speaker coming in wounded, bloodied, but as he was on the House floor all week, smiling. And on a personal note, as someone who's covered Kevin McCarthy for nearly 16 years, I have to say that the silence that he had, the stoic stare that we watched on television, well, he could be another Bill Belichick during a Super Bowl.
So members of the public outside the Beltway, they're watching this. Maybe they tune into the cable news channels and they see 13 different votes and it's dragged on all week and the Congress hasn't even been able to start any business. They're all congresspersons elect right now. What did they actually accomplish that would benefit the American people?
The chief accomplishment is that votes for a measure to come onto the floor could now be amended. Under Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the debate was before an up or down vote on legislation on the full House floor. Once a bill came out of committee, it could not be amended. Well, that's going to change now. And under a Speaker McCarthy, members will be allowed to amend legislation. How does that affect people like you and me? Well, in terms of spending, it means that they can cut out funding for a particular government agency. Imagine for a moment that a Judiciary Committee under Chairman Jim Jordan held up abuses of power by the FBI. This kind of procedure would make it easier to cut funds out of the Bureau and conduct more oversight hearings. In addition, the IRS, a major target of Republicans, could be significantly defunded, or at least enough to get rid of those 70,000-plus agents that Joe Biden and the Democrats want to add to its workforce. So overall, a lot can be done with the rules change. One other thing, term limits, which remains a popular issue, will at least get a vote by the full House, McCarthy promised.
And how does this impact the omnibus spending bills that we always see come down the night before they're all racing home for the holidays? Any changes there?
I just simply think the ordeal Kevin McCarthy went through is the check enough that a $1.7 trillion package that was just enacted and that the McCarthy never members were furious about will not happen again. The speaker will be reminded of this. And, oh, yes, five members can object to a speaker and seek the chair being declared vacant, which means another election for speaker. After this week, I don't think Kevin McCarthy wants to go through that again.
So now that maybe we get some work done on Monday on the Hill, what do you see as the key items right out of the box?
Well, Steve Scalise, who becomes the new majority leader, said that he had a full 10-point agenda to put before congressional committees. There'll be a lot of oversight and a lot of investigating. The U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan under Joe Biden's watch will be high on the list, as will, surprise, Hunter Biden. In addition, there will be oversight hearings on the Department of Justice and alleged abuses of power by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. There will be a good hard look at the IRS and at illegal immigration and the abuses of power allowing people to come into this country who don't have the right credentials or the right documents to get in. Finally, and interestingly, Scalise said, Taiwan will be high on the agenda, and China and its efforts to undermine U.S. business. So watch for a Republican Congress that holds hearings, investigates government agencies, but does produce some major legislation to be voted on, up or down.
Yesterday, the commemoration of the January 6th riots. Your perspectives 2 years later.
We commemorated a day 2 years ago that is etched in the minds of millions of Americans and left differing impressions depending on how one viewed Donald Trump. To those who support the president, these were patriots. They were taking to the streets and the Capitol to protest the election outcome. To those who are not enamored with Trump, the protesters and the marchers were nothing short of insurrectionists, and Donald Trump is a terrorist leader who should not hold office again. This is the Democratic line as well. Now, I might add that the Department of Justice has been at its busiest since the events of January 6th. 950 Americans have been charged with lawbreaking or criminal activity, 18 of them with seditious practices. Of those cases that have gone to court, and that's 45 of them, all but one has been convicted so far, and that's an educator from New Mexico. By all accounts, the Justice Department is going to continue to pursue those that they feel broke the law that day. In the meantime, committees have been set up to offer prayer vigils online and to even have a job page for those who, upon getting out of prison after protesting, are looking for employment. The issue has not faded away.
The recent passing of Pope Emeritus Benedict, what will he be remembered for, John?
Two things, basically. Aside from the fact he was the first pope in over 600 years to abdicate the position. First, he was someone who, while even charged with sitting on accusations of abuse by priests of their power and causing great harm to young men, nonetheless oversaw the ability of church leaders to laicize, which is a Catholic word for defrock, laicize priests who abuse their authority. The church suffered tremendously. It paid dearly for some of those who misbehaved severely while priests and on the altar. this will not happen in the future. In addition, the conflict in the church after the Second Vatican Council was resolved to a point by Pope Benedict. In 2007, he issued a document, Sonorum Pontificum, saying that the traditional Latin Mass of the church could be said that it was never banned with the Second Vatican Council. Liberals didn't like it. The current pope has tried to roll it back, and yet it's brought many back into the church who are disgusted. Pope Benedict was a figure of consequence, and he was mourned last week. The man who lived the longest after sitting in the chair of St. Peter, 95 years old.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you, sir. Have a great week.
I'm going to go back to bed after that vote last night. Thanks, Rick.
7:20 on the Saturday morning update, and in the first half hour of the show, between 6 and 6:30, we ran through the audio highlights of the final vote last night and the oath that Kevin McCarthy took at 1:38 a.m., and then highlights of his basic acceptance speech and also the speech of Hakeem Jeffries, the incoming minority leader. That's all in the first half hour if you check out the podcast. We're now at 7:21, Saturday morning update. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but right now, Al B. D. is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, Tyson's Corner, inner loop of the Beltway, jammed up between Leesburg Pike and the Dulles Toll Road. Outer loop of the Beltway in Virginia, lanes are clear. No major delays on 66 in Virginia. 95 in Virginia between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. You're not tapping the brakes either northbound or southbound. In Prince George's County, outer loop of the Beltway accident has the right lane blocked after Central Avenue. Inner loop of the Beltway in Prince George's County. You're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are clear. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Our first time waking up in the 30s for quite a while. Temperatures closer to where they should be this time of year. Look for those highs to be also closer to where they should be in the middle to upper 40s. Now, northwest winds around 10 miles per hour, so there could be some wind chills in the low 40s this afternoon. A few passing clouds and then clear skies once again tonight. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
37 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:22, Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues, and a new year, and it's great to be joined once again by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the host of Full Measure. You can watch that tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Well, it is the second year commemoration of January 6th yesterday, and you have a story on Full Measure tomorrow morning about the news coverage of January 6th, some of the charges. We've heard the term sedition kicked around a lot in the news coverage, and you put it all in perspective tomorrow.
I do. I mean, I'm really talking about some unanswered questions about the FBI's role, what part they or their undercover operatives played as Trump supporters, dressed up as Trump supporters, allegedly, perhaps some say, inciting violence. We don't have answers to that. But also, the heavy-handed use of tactics like SWAT teams to arrest nonviolent protesters. So Sunday you're going to hear from one of those nonviolent protesters and see video, surveillance video, where an army of armed agents surrounded his house in the early morning hours. You'll see his 13-year-old son, hands up on the deck, his wife forced out in her bathrobe, all for what turned out to be a misdemeanor. So there's a lot of questions about, was this politically motivated, you know, designed to chill people who supported Donald Trump and so on. And I might mention, I checked and I don't see anyone charged out of nearly 1,000 people 2 years later with sedition, treason, or insurrection. The closest thing, some are charged with conspiracy to commit something like that, which is totally different, the difference between a conspiracy to commit murder and committing the murder. One is a much more serious crime. But that means that every time, to me, someone on the media says these are insurrectionists, that's a potentially libelous statement because nobody's been charged with insurrection. It's kind of an interesting point, I think.
With the energy crisis in the United States and the even more severe energy crisis in Europe, Europe has been importing some of our resources, including liquid natural gas, LNG. What does that mean for the U.S. consumers?
Well, it's interesting because this is all stemming from something we've been covering, Rick, which is, I call it the green energy crisis, the idea that we've tried to transition quickly away from fossil fuels before we have the green energy systems in place to replace enough for our needs. So we're all grappling with this energy shortages when there shouldn't be any going into winter. And we have a lot of liquefied natural gas now in this country. We're selling a lot because, as you said, other countries are dealing also with their green energy crises. And the question we're asking, Lisa Fletcher's doing the story for me on Sunday, is, are we selling so much that we risk shorting ourselves? A lot of regions here are facing some cold, hard winter months. And we're already in a phase before Christmas. There were states that had to do rolling blackouts and were at risk of shortages. So she's going to dig into that for us on Sunday.
We've seen the contentiousness in politics over the past 6 years at least, and it doesn't look like it's going to get much better in 2023. So that kind of brings up the broader topic of, you know, how do we get along with each other? And you have an interview with a very interesting author tomorrow.
Yes, this is a professor and the head of a group called Project Censored, a far-left free speech responsible journalism group. His name is Mickey Huff. And Mickey Huff has done a lot of research on real critical thinking, not the fake critical thinking that teaches people to think a certain way and only believe traditional mainstream news sources when they may not be telling the truth, but real critical thinking. So the book he's co-written is called Agree to Disagree, and it talks about that lost art. People used to be able to have conversations, and maybe some of you, I certainly have friends where we can still talk this way. It's just pretty rare now, where you don't disagree about something, but you listen to each other. It's not a fight. Or even if there's an argument, he makes the distinction between an argument and a fight, meaning an argument is making points with evidence. It's not berating and belittling and shutting the other person off. So minds can be changed, and that's not always the goal, or that's not always possible, but there is, he argues, civil discourse possible, and he talks about having the tools to do that with people that you know that maybe you don't see eye to eye with.
Cheryl Atkinson, host of Full Measure, tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. As always, thank you very much and have a very happy new year.
You too. Have a great weekend.
It is 7:28. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up and KT McFarland. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. While many of us were sleeping, members of Congress finally elected a House Speaker.
After 15 ballots over the course of more than 4 days, Republican Kevin McCarthy prevailed and was sworn in as Speaker of the House.
That was easy, huh? I never thought we'd get up here.
Addressing the House after 1 o'clock in the morning, McCarthy says now the hard work begins.
Our system is built on checks and balances. It's time for us to be a check and provide some balance to the president's policies.
Support for McCarthy from conservative holdouts grew after a deal was reached on a new rules package. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
Disbelief in Newport News, where police say a 6-year-old boy pulled out a handgun and purposely shot his teacher during an argument yesterday.
This occurred in a classroom. It was isolated. This was not a situation where we had a student going up or any other individuals going up and down the halls with actively firing and a long shooting incident. It was in a classroom.
Police Chief Steve Drew says the first grade Richneck Elementary School teacher is in the hospital with life-threatening injuries. The 6-year-old's in custody, no word yet on charges. Virginia State Superintendent of Schools sends a third draft of state history standards to the State Board of Education. This one says students should be taught that slavery was the primary cause of the Civil War. A highly criticized earlier draft listed it as one of several causes. The education secretary for the state says this revision better meets Governor Glenn Youngkin's directive to teach all history, the good and the bad. WMAL Sports, the Caps fell to the Predators, the Wizards defeated by the Thunder. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Beltway, first in Virginia, Inner Loop, it's jammed up in Tyson's Corner between Leesburg Pike and the Dulles Toll Road. In Maryland, on the outer loop of the Beltway in Prince George's County, there is an accident. Right lane is blocked in Largo right after Central Avenue. In Montgomery County, on the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop are at speed. On 270 in Montgomery County, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Frederick. And in Prince George's County, traveling between the two Beltways on 95 and on the BW Parkway, you're not going to find anything in the road slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, mostly sunny, a high near 48. Right now, it is 42 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We're at 7:35. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us, author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
All right. So we see that President Vladimir Putin has planned to declare a ceasefire for the Orthodox Christmas. What is significant about that? Is there something behind that?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. And for those celebrating the Orthodox Christian religion, happy Christmas. Merry Christmas, because today's the day, 7th. And I think that Putin says he was advised by those in the Orthodox faith to do this event. Now, one could look at this as Putin being a bit of a more of a religious man in his old age, kind of falling back on some traditions. You know, he is a thug, but I think there are some things that he still finds value in. I can tell you from the folks I've listened to, I did a review of this last night, listening to a number of folks who track this, and they believe the generals, his generals, Russian generals, are against it because there's actually some areas near Mariupol where they've been making progress militarily. So this comes at a very inconvenient time when at least some areas the Russians were kind of regaining ground. And so to stop right in the middle of battle and say, hey, we got to take a pause, it's not going over well with some of his commanders. But I think in this case, there may be just Putin being Putin, deciding to do something and putting the law down literally and stopping the conflict for the 2 days or whatever it is he's declared.
I want to turn to the Twitter release of documents.
Oh, yes.
More out this week. Jonathan Turley wrote a piece, and in the headline, even Twitter's censors rejected Adam Schiff's censorship request. Quote, they responded to him by saying, quote, we don't do this. even shutting Schiff down.
Well, they did eventually, because this circulates around Paul Sperry, a real Clear Politics investigative reporter who I think he's done some incredibly accurate work. And in this case, what Schiff wanted removed is the fact that Eric Caramella, whatever his name is, this whistleblower, I always call him Eric, whatever, you know, that we've had issues regarding what we can say his name. I've always called him Eric Chickamauga, but it's Eric Caramella, whatever it is. His identity was identified, and the issue was in 2017, Eric, the whistleblower, had been stating with others and observed and overheard to be calling for the removal of Trump long before the impeachment. This is credible. This was information that was important and obviously related to the whole impeachment issue that was used to go after Trump. Well, very clearly here, there was interference in two ways. First, Schiff had Twitter. He had requested Twitter to take and remove Sperry because of this reporting, which apparently was accurate. And secondly, this speaks to a larger conspiracy, which I think many of us recognized at the time happened, where Adam Schiff and other Democrats were trying to use people's sentiment of hating Trump as a basis for an impeachment, not anything actionable or factual relating to violations of oath or law. So this is a twofer, and I think Matt Taibbi is to be commended for simply just getting the information out, letting people look at it. What's notable here, Rick, is in a normal system where a Department of Justice was functioning, you would see these things coming out as investigative leads that would result in a full-blown criminal investigation of Adam Schiff and these other folks who were involved in deprivation of rights of the American people and Paul Sperry, because Sperry was attacked and deprived of his First Amendment right, which is actually his actual career as well. And more importantly, this very does clearly show sedition or conspiracy to actually do something behind the scenes against the law to undermine a sitting president. Talk about, you see the 6th January stuff talking about an insurrection. This is an insurrection by Schiff against the sitting president, and it's something that should have been looked at, and I would like to believe will be looked at in this coming year.
So when you add up everything that we've seen so far, and there may be more to come in terms of Twitter document releases, is there enough there to really effectuate any action? I mean, you know, it's funny. We see these stories and we see the headlines and we talk about it on talk radio and on the different news channels, but nothing really ever happens.
Well, it doesn't happen because you have a Department of Justice which is simply refusing to actually do its job. I mean, let's be clear here. These actions that we've been observing are clear violations. I mean, you know, clear as in like black and white violations of Title 18, I think it's 242, acting under the color of law, deprivation of rights. So that's it. I mean, the moment you have an FBI agent who arbitrarily goes to a third party and says, ban these people, that's a violation. When you see Adam Schiff working behind the scenes to protect a conspiracy, a seditious conspiracy designed to undermine and remove a sitting president, that's against the law. So it's one of those things that until someone comes in probably in 2024 who's really willing to actually look at this for the clear violations of law, we're going to talk about it. People are going to be upset about it. A lot of us are going to organize around it and try to get people to pay attention. But unfortunately, you have a corrupt president with a corrupt justice system, which is not interested in actually enforcing the laws in the books, let alone those which actually go against the Democrat Party.
Well, we have the Republican Congress coming in, but without the Senate, without the administration, I guess they'll probably do a lot of great sound bites, but not get too much further than that. You are, of course, the host of the Thought to Action podcast. You've had some fun stuff going on recently. What do you have this weekend?
So we're going to be going through and looking at the new year for what to expect. We're going to be kind of going through and, we don't have a crystal ball, Rick, but I think, we are pretty good at forecasting things. So we're going to sit down and do some thinking about what we see on the horizon. So we'll make it fun, as we always do, and it'll be very informative. So as always, thanks for having me on, Rick.
Absolutely. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and you can find the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Have a great weekend, Tony.
Thank you.
We'll see you. We've got KT McFarland coming up next on the Saturday Morning Update. 7:48, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and she is the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
It was 1:38 a.m. as I watched Kevin McCarthy being sworn in as the new Speaker of the House of Representatives. You have written an opinion piece at the Fox News Channel. It is at foxnews.com. The headline on it, McCarthy is finally Speaker, but he's not weak like you think. Now he can deploy the crazy boss strategy. So tell us what we don't know about Kevin McCarthy.
Look, I think we all should just stop this pearl clutching. Fellow Republicans, the drama over the House speakership is the best thing that could have happened to Kevin McCarthy. Well, maybe not the best thing. That would have been if Republicans had a 30-vote majority in the House and they could have stopped the Democrats' big spending, radical leftist agenda dead in the water. And Kevin McCarthy could have told Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to pound sand. But that supermajority didn't happen. So what's next? The House Republicans have to change tactics, and Majority Leader Schumer is no longer their biggest problem. It's now the Republican counterpart on the other side of the Capitol, Senate Minority Leader and profligate spender Mitch McConnell. In the past, McConnell's idea of leadership has been to give the Democrats most of what they want, especially when it comes to the budget-busting pork barrel legislation. And he was even with President Biden last week doing another pork barrel project together, cutting ribbons, flying on Air Force One. And for the last 2 years, McConnell has joined the Democrats and former Speaker Pelosi to pass that Biden agenda, even a little watered down, but he passed it. And I think McConnell will no doubt try to pressure the new Republican Speaker to do the same. He'll say, well, it's in the interest of bipartisanship and compromise. But that's what has those 20 or so House Republicans and the Freedom Caucus worried. They don't think compromise means giving the Democrats what they want, especially when it's coming to out-of-control spending. And now the Republicans finally have that majority. The Freedom Caucus people want a strong leader who's going to stand up and fight against the swamp. And at first glance, it looks like this torturous path to the speakership has diminished McCarthy's ability to be the strong leader. But I think if he's smart, he turns that razor-thin majority to his advantage in negotiations. And even with the White House, it's what I call that crazy boss strategy. So to get elected, McCarthy was forced to accept a slew of changes in how the House governs itself, and most involved reducing the dictatorial powers of the Speaker that Nancy Pelosi had acquired and giving it back to individual congressmen. And under the new rules, a handful of House Republicans can hold the Speaker accountable, especially if he tries to push through budget-busting bills riddled with pork barrel, or like leave the southern border unprotected, or embrace the Green New Deal fanaticism, or hire those 87,000 IRS agents. The criticism of McCarthy has always been that he lacks the backbone to stand up to the big spenders in the Republican Party, that he'd cave to pressure from the swamp creatures. Well, he doesn't need a backbone anymore, because thanks to that Freedom Caucus, his back is up against the wall. He can't go along to get along with McConnell and the Democrats and survive as Speaker, and everybody knows it. It's potentially the most powerful tool in his toolbox. When I worked for Henry Kissinger, he used that crazy boss strategy in negotiating with the North Vietnamese to end the Vietnam War. We used it in the Trump administration as a tool to pressure recalcitrant allies. I used it in talking to our European counterparts about increasing their defense spending in the cause of NATO defense. A negotiator can point to the crazy boss as the reason why he can't concede to the other side's demands. I mean, we say things like, well, my boss will never agree to this. Even if I suggest it, he's likely to do something really crazy. I'm not even going to take it to him. The crazier the boss seems, the more credible the threat. And so the drama over the speakership, it's left no doubt in anybody's mind that a handful of congressmen would happily plunge the House into another battle over leadership rather than meekly accept the Democrats' demands. So the holdouts in the House, those 20 people, the Freedom Caucus, they've just become Kevin McCarthy's crazy boss. Now, most opponents are, again, they're going to say, oh, he's damaged, he won't have the muscle, he needs to bring his Republicans in line. But they're missing the point. Americans don't want business as usual. They want leaders who will stand up to the swamp and do what's in the best interest of the American people, not those career politicians. And so the torturous way he was elected, in fact, has given him an unexpected opportunity to be a great leader. Now, all he has to do is point to those crazy bosses, those 20 or so House Republicans, and then just refuse to budge. Don't give in to Schumer. Don't give in to Mitch McConnell. Don't give in to the Democrats. Just stand firm. And whether McCarthy seizes that opportunity, well, it's really up to him. If he doesn't seize it, he's going to be the most short-lived speaker in history.
So a lot of conservatives will say that Mitch McConnell doesn't have a backbone, he doesn't stand up. Does this give him some cover? Does this change the way McConnell tries to handle Democrats?
Well, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, he's just the way he's always been, which is a big spender Democrat and a big spender Republican and a pork barrel Republican. That's what all these elections, the last couple of elections, have been about. 2016, it's what the Tea Party movement was all about. It's stop the spending. You're both in on it, both Republicans and Democrats. You keep spending our money. We have to borrow it. We can't pay for all the stuff. You're basically using our money to keep yourself in office. And you're having to borrow from our adversaries abroad to to keep yourselves in a job, frankly, you don't deserve. So I think that McCarthy, it's hard to McCarthy, McConnell, you kind of get them confused. But it's McCarthy now has the ability to just stand up to McConnell, not because McCarthy's such a tough guy, but because everybody knows if McCarthy goes along with McConnell's idea of a compromise, which is to spend maybe a little bit less, but still spend way too much, the House Republicans are just going to yank him from his job, and then we'll be plunged into this all over again. And the way McConnell will do it, the way he has done it, he goes up to Republicans in the House, and he says, look, I'm the senior statesman here. We're the responsible people. We can't let government come to a halt. We need to pass this legislation, which is riddled with pork barrel, and we need to just do it for the sake of the country. And McCarthy doesn't have that option anymore. He can't cave. If he caves, he's out of a job. And the next guy probably will be worse. And you know something? People keep saying, especially now, well, we're going to have to come up against the debt ceiling at some point soon. And McCarthy will be faced with the choice of, does he vote to increase the debt ceiling, which we all know is a really bad idea. And if he says no, what's the worst that could happen? Government will shut down for a couple of days. People forget that in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, we shut down government all the time for a week or two at a time. The Reagan administration, gosh, I think we shut government down for 10 or so times. It's not the worst thing that's going to happen. So good for McCarthy. You don't need a spine, because if your back is up against the wall, the back's going to be your spine. And those are those House Republicans who have shown that they do not mind one single bit about the pressure they're going to receive. They don't mind being called crazy. That's why they're the perfect crazy boss.
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, her opinion piece just published within the last hour at foxnews.com. Again, the headline on it, McCarthy is finally speaker, but he's not weak like you think. Now he can deploy the crazy boss strategy. KT, thank you so much.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Honor to have you. That's it for the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. Again, we have a lot of the audio highlights of what happened in the middle of the night, including the speeches from Kevin McCarthy, from Hakeem Jeffries. They'll be on the podcast later on. That's all coming up. And Garden Sense is at 1 o'clock this afternoon here on WMAL.